You've landed inside Launch Street, the Business Innovation Podcast, where we interview top innovators out there shaking things up so you can innovate, differentiate, and get further faster. Since you're here, we know you're the type of person that recognizes the importance of unlocking your innovation advantage so you can compete and win. And now, your host, the person that has worked with leading companies like Disney, Procter & Gamble, Arrow Electronics, the U.S. Army Research Labs, and Red Robin on upping their innovation advantage, Tamara Gontor.
Hey, Launch Street, your host, Tamara here. I have a few special announcements for you. First, our innovation toolkit is now live to the public. Only clients and their teams were able to gain access before. But now, you, me, all of us on Launch Street will have access to the innovation tools we need to look like a rock star every day and make a huge impact in our work and life. And I know this because the thousands of other people that are already on there are experiencing just that. And I am so excited to bring it out into the open for everybody to gain access. Yay! I think the lightning fast innovation videos and also the easy exercises, they're just going to have you crushing it every day. Bam. So go check it out. Link is in the show notes. Okay. This podcast is brought to you by Brility Digital, a team of business growth strategists who embrace an experimental mindset testing, who uses what they learn to help you meet your company goals by leveraging the right digital tools and resources. They also, by the way, have an awesome digital assessment tool that they are giving to us on Launch Street for free. Yay! Others pay. We don't. So go check it out. That link is also in the show notes. Now on to today's guest. Have you ever wondered what it takes to drive innovation when you are just one cog in a big ass wheel? Doesn't even matter what level you are. Just you're one of many. You're in a big company and you have bureaucracy and processes and layer upon layer to deal with, which by the way, isn't necessarily all bad, but it does tend to hinder innovation. It's when innovation gets tough, maybe slowed down to a turtle-like pace. And that's exactly why today's innovator interview will rock your world. Alex Goryachev is an entrepreneurial go-getter. He takes risks, thinks ahead, and loves making ways for new innovations. Over the past 20 years, he's made it his business to turn disruptive concepts into emerging business models. So to me, that's about the thinking and the doing. For him, it's all about a passion to create a strategy and then drive it home to get things done. And as Cisco's Senior Director of Innovation Strategy and Programs, he has, believe me, plenty of opportunities to put this passion to the test. So he's a director at a huge company who drives innovation daily. Let's dig in. Alex, thank you so much for joining me today.
A pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Yeah. So what is your first memory of being innovative?
You know, it's very interesting. I have a son by the name of Matthew. He's about 5 years old. And, you know, he's innovative every second, right? And then somehow he gets away with it, which is not something that we often do in large companies. But bottom line is, I think I was innovative from my early childhood. Honestly, I just cannot remember that tipping point.
When do you think it switches? Because it's funny. And when I ask this question for a lot of people, like almost everybody has something around 9, 10 years old. That's typically where the story comes from. And mine's probably from when I was 12 or 14. But somewhere along the way, right? We go in the other direction.
Yeah. I guess for me, it really, I think it switched the other way around. You know, what I really remember is when I was around 15 years old, I moved from the Soviet Union to New York City, or from Moscow to New York City. And, you know, all of a sudden I kind of moved from, a black and white television into the color television. Right. And there was a lot of color. And that really opened up all sorts of things possible.
Oh, I bet it did. So let's fast forward. And I want to actually start high level. You work at Cisco. You're a senior director of innovation strategy and programs. So you kind of see kind of big picture what's happening at not just Cisco, but I think large companies in general. One of the things that you talked about that I wanted to just understand to set the stage is, why can companies no longer rely on the outside entrepreneur for innovation? Because I think for so long, that was the trend, right? Of we'll partner with entrepreneurs.
And the most importantly, I think, is just the fact that ideas come from anywhere, I mean, truly anywhere. And the second one is you snooze, you lose, right? So when you look at the big big advantages that large companies had, they still have them, right? But the competitive pressure is much higher.
So when you say ideas can come from anywhere, can you give me an example of one? And maybe it's a, you know, not the obvious one, right? Like we all know it comes from R&D. We get that. Maybe even marketing. Where have you seen them come from that is maybe even a little surprising?
Yeah, you know, actually, it's a very good point. When we think about ideas, right? I mean, yes, ideas come from anywhere. But in order for the ideas to happen, right, there needs to be execution.
Yeah.
So so that's really what, in my opinion, innovation is about. And that truly requires diverse teams, right? And frankly speaking, the ideas are likely to come in from the people that are closest to the customer, right? And they're likely to get executed when you have everybody else involved, right? Being that from R&D and marketing to every single function, right? And I'm married to an attorney. I know the importance of having an attorney on your team.
Nice play. Well played. I think too that, you know, to your point about the customer, one of the things, particularly if we work in big companies, I think we sometimes forget that we're actually about 10 steps removed from the customer, the end customer, because we have our, you know, let's say you're in food, right? You have your retail, your distributors, they have their retail channels. The retail channels then have the customer. So you almost accidentally remove yourself from the people who give you the best ideas.
Right, unless you're in the consumer industry, right, or in you know, unless you work for the brand that touches a lot of consumers, right, in a B2B business, you're very, I mean, everybody's very removed from a consumer, and that's kind of where the feedback gets diluted. Absolutely.
Right. So, as your role as the senior director of innovation strategy and programs at Cisco, how do you think about driving innovation? And I ask that because you said execution earlier. So how do you even think about that and attaining that?
You know, I really think about it every day. And at the end of the day, it's all about the opportunity and execution, right? There's plenty of good ideas. And at the end of the day, it's all about how we make them happen. When you think about the large companies are phenomenal when they're focused on something, right? So it's all about what is the opportunity? Should we focus on this opportunity versus not that opportunity, right? How do we have a balanced portfolio of things that are we're executing? And I truly believe for any large company, if the company is focused, the company can deliver. So I think in the large companies, when you think about customers, right? Customers are the people that you work with, not only your end product consumers, but really the people that you work with every day. And I think about them as customers. How do I get them on the same page? And how do we execute in one formation? Because that's where the strength of the big company comes from.
So that's a really important point, and I want to kind of delve into it a little bit further. What advice do you have, or what have you seen work and not work, I guess, in bridging that chasm from idea to execution, which it sounds like focus is the bridge, right, that you need. So how do you help your team go from that? Because to your point, like there's a million ideas, right? But you got to get it to that. You got to bridge it. So how do you do that?
Well, I at the end of the day, it's all about the business. You know, I think it goes back to the basics, right? And the basics is why innovate. And I think, well, of course, we as humanity innovate, right? Why does it happen? We're humanity, right? We innovate for the sake of innovation. It's just the way our life goes. When you think about large companies or actually any size company, innovation is a means to an end, right? You innovate for a purpose and with a purpose. And I think it's essential. The first step is really understanding what is the strategy and what is the metric that you're trying to move? And then you can move that metric with innovation, right? So that could be profitability or faster time to market or a different product or process improvements, right? So again, bottom line is really understanding what are the company priorities and then how can you add value to achieving those priorities faster with innovation.
So Here's my question for you on that, because I've heard mixed things about it. So what you said about add value, right? How do I add value to get to that metric, to get to that goal? Kind of so the ship is, or everybody's rowing their oars in the same direction. If I never get my metaphors right, so bear with me. Hopefully you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. How do you show people how they're adding value? Do they already get it? Because that's the part where I think we as leaders sometimes assume that the people on the other side of the table, the teams that we're leading, are on board, right? They get it. Obviously, this is the direction to go. And obviously, they have a role in it. But I'm not sure that's always the case that people get it out of the gate. And to no fault of their own, just look, their heads are down, they're busy, and now we're telling them they have to hit this goal.
Right. It's an exceptional point. Or worse, we just tell them, be innovative, right?
Right. What does that even mean?
Be innovative, yeah. Right? Be innovative. And what that being innovative means is not defined, right? So again, I think it's when you think about the kind of the employees and then the senior executive leadership of the company, there are employees that are executing, right? And their strategy on top. Hopefully their strategy on top, right? And there's a
hopefully
gap, right? And it's, I think it's to the up to the middle managers and the leaders of all levels to bridge that gap by ensuring that A, the strategy is understood on all levels of the company, and specifically how each function adds to that strategy, right? So in essence, what does the function needs to do to go and achieve that strategy or move that metric? And once that's known, I think it's relatively easy to measure, right? Measuring the impact or lack of it.
You know, I really appreciate, Alex, what you just said, that functions, how those, to really articulate how each function adds to that strategy. And I think for us on Launch Street, that's a really important point to think about it when we're trying to hit a goal. And even if it's just a team goal, how does each person add to that strategy? And if you're at a larger organization, right, and you've got departments and teams and whatnot, divisions, how do each of those add to the strategy? And actually almost mapping it out to show people. I think it's so powerful when they understand how they contribute. And to what you said about humanity, right, we love to innovate. We love to be a part of that. So, but making it clear for people.
Right. I think, you know, to your point, you began with something very important. You said, you know, when did you realize that you're an innovator? Right. And this question is applicable to every single person on this planet.
Yeah.
Right. Because each one of us is an innovator. We keep innovating every second. Right. Because we do something in a very different ways. Right. Than others. And to your point, all of this exists in all of us in large companies, too. It's just often, I think folks in different functions, A, do not know what value they're particular, why they're doing things. And most importantly, they often don't know what their company is doing, right?
Right.
Or products that they're selling, were they successful, were they not, were they facing competitive pressure or not. So I think a lot of it is really left to leadership and, you know, and I keep talking about middle management to actually define and explain to employees, because if you don't understand things and nobody bothers to explain this to you, and yet you're being asked to be innovative, it's unlikely you're actually going to take it seriously, and most likely you're going to get disengaged and be distracted with something else.
I'm curious, you've mentioned middle management a few times now. Why is that level so important?
Well, because I think at the end of the day, it's the middle manager's job to translate between strategy into execution, right? Because at the end of the day, kind of if you think about who is accountable for what in a very simplified way, right? We look at the you know, top leaderships of the company for strategy, right? We look for guidance, and when we look at our management, right? Middle management, it's what are the practical priorities? What are the pragmatic things I need to do? And then when I think about the culture, right? At the end of the day, innovation is not, you know, it's not a product of something. It's a state of mind. It's really our leaders really influence the culture of the team, right? So if you look at the large organization, consists of small teams and they're run by middle managers. So it's essential that we get them on board and they get the employees on board.
Yeah, I think I'm glad we had that conversation about it, because I think middle managers often get left out, right? It's either frontline staff super close to the customer, whoever that customer is, or leadership. But there's a whole swell in the middle, to your point, that's actually responsible for putting that all of that kind of in theory stuff into action. I want to dig into kind of some I don't know if we call it tactical things, but you know, you talk about sparking internal innovation by providing employees really at all levels the chance to share their big ideas, and many of those, right, make their way to the company's innovation engine. How do you do that? How do you ensure that there is a process or a funnel for all those ideas to come in, and that it's not just, you know, the 10 people with the blue streaks in their hair and the cool glasses?
Well, right. And that's an exceptional point you're making, right? Because in many companies, I often feel that there are two classes of employees.
Yeah.
Innovators,
right,
and not innovators.
And then
right?
the rest of us.
Right. And then the rest of us. And it's really interesting, because whenever they're innovators or not is defined by the department that they work for.
Right.
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 It's not defined by
them.
By anything
right.
else.
But, not by right? their, it's by their function. I love that.
Right.
Yeah.
So let's
so
say,
true.
Yeah, let's say it's a technology company, right? And you work for R&D. You're an innovator, right? But at the same time, I think it's important to understand that innovation, it belongs to all.
Yeah.
Right. And for everyone to be innovators, you need to redefine innovation, right?
Yes.
So innovation is not necessarily about ideas. It's about executing on these ideas. It's not necessarily about new products. It could be about new processes. And most importantly, right, when you think about what do employees know the best? Employees know all the stupid things that we do. Right.
Yeah. And, of course they do. They have a front seat, you know, front row
exactly,
seat to it.
Exactly. So not doing those stupid things is an innovation by itself, and and it's any innovation that takes a lot of courage. Right. So I think these are the when you redefine this, you equate the field.
Do you think that, you know, one of Cisco's greatest, I would say, competitive advantages, and maybe you would think of it differently, is that kind of openness of how you think about innovation?
Absolutely. You know, it's I've been with the company for about 18 years, and it's an incredible company because everyone has a voice, right? So when we think about that unique culture, right, everyone has a voice, no matter what function they're in. And I think that's essential, right? Because when you think about innovation and inclusion and diversity, they're very much the same, right? Innovation is about people with different backgrounds and ideas or ways of looking at the world or solving problems coming together to make things happen. And I think that's the second Cisco advantage, is we can make things happen, right? Internally, when you get people together, they can go and change the course of the company or of their departments or of their functions, right? So not only employees are listened to, but they're given resources and space to make things happen, even if that's not within their job role.
So let me ask you this then. Would you say, and maybe you can give me an example here, that Cisco has more of a culture of experimentation than presentation? Because one of the things that I find with our clients that I've seen over, you know, 25 years in the world of innovation is that, you know, companies that actually give employees room to experiment with their ideas, you know, one dark corner in the hallway, one client have a conversation with, I'm not talking like launch, I mean, small little experiments, tend to innovate better because, right, the ideas actually come to life where you can see where the ideas work versus, you know, the constant PowerPoint presentations where you're judging theories. And I'm just curious if that's how Cisco, you know, when you talk about the room and the space, is that what you mean, or is it something actually even different than that?
Well, we do a lot of PowerPoint, right? But I think to your point, we do connect innovators with the customers early on. So when we think about our employee innovation, we have a network of Cisco's co-innovation centers around the world. And when our employees come up with with ideas that we want to take to the customer, we can go and experiment with them at the co-innovation centers. We actually found a way to do that safely and responsibly by connecting with customers' innovation teams, right? So when you think about large companies, nowadays, pretty much every large company has an innovation team. And what we discovered is if we reach out to them and say, hey, we have this idea, or we have this product, or we're thinking about this, would you spend some time with us? We get a very positive answer. So all of a sudden, we realize that there's a network of allies, people that are trying to do the same things with the ecosystem and are trying to win together. And that's a pretty powerful way of working with the ecosystem and getting our ideas heard.
Yeah, you know, I think there's a really important point what you're saying there, Alex, around, you know, you kind of took down that invisible wall that we tend to put up in companies between us and our customers when we're testing out ideas. We seem to think we have to perfect it in the conference room, right, inside our four walls, and then we take it to the customer. But what I hear you saying is they're really involved along the way. And I have to imagine that being involved along the way in a safe environment that is about testing, ultimately, that they are 100% along for the journey, whether it works or doesn't work. Like, they're there to support. They want to see the success too. And I think that, you know, the opposite of that, right, is coming from fear of the customers will go away if we make a mistake. But you're making it safe for that to happen with them.
Right. So I think we found that crack in the wall, right? And that's being able to go and talk with innovation teams, because the kind of all innovation teams across the corporate world, I think, shares the same values and belief systems and frankly faces the same problems. But honestly speaking, it took a while to get me on board. I had an employee that's working on my team. She's leading a lot of our internal innovation efforts. And she said, Alex, you know, we got to show this to a customer. And I was like, no.
Whoa, wait.
Right?
Hey.
And that was scary. No, are you kidding me? No. Yeah. No. Right. And then she actually found a way to do this and she got me on board. But to your point, my instinct response was no, and I was mentally like having a checklist. Did I mention I'm married to an attorney?
Yeah.
You know, checklist of things like why this should not happen.
Right, right.
But again, we found a safe space, and when you have a safe space, that's where the ideas grow.
Okay, I am here at Launch Street with Derek Kuhn, who is the president of Brility. Derek, you are the perfect person to have this conversation with. I want to talk to you about business growth because I suspect most of us are doing it wrong. I know I was. So how do you think about growth?
Hi. Hi, Tamara. So you're right. We have definitely seen some challenges how people think about growth. I think it boils down to this. They have these lofty aspirational goals, and then they have a bunch of disconnected plans and to-dos. The biggest thing I see, the biggest mistake they make is once they set these objectives and these aspirational goals, they need to spend some time thinking through and defining their strategy. And as we talk about strategy, it's an interlocking concepts that have compounding effect that are based on detailed research about your market opportunity, your company, your competitions, and then we form that, which allows us to be adaptive. So growth is mostly limited by the lack of a strategy, not for lack of goals and certainly not for lack of to-dos, but a thoughtful approach to the method behind the growth.
So Derek, let me ask you this. When you say compounding effect, I mean, I know what that means, but how do you know if you have the right pieces that allow that to happen?
Well, that's a great question. And this is where our focus on digital platforms really delivers. In order to judge the effectiveness of your efforts, digital, unlike anything in the history of man, finally allows us to see in real time interactions, how things are being affected, the ripple effect as well as the direct effect. And then we can adapt continually based on the feedback loop that we get.
All right, I'm going to go a little bit personal on Launch Street and on you, but I have to ask because I think I'm not the only one facing this. You know, one of the things I really over here at Launch Street struggle with growth is we've done all these elements to grow. The phone is ringing or, you know, the product is selling, whatever it is. The clients are coming. And then I realized, OMG, I have a delivery problem now. So I hit my growth. You'd probably call them goals. But I don't know. I don't have a strategy or I haven't figured out how to follow up. So how do you think about those two elements of kind of where you're trying to go and then delivering on that?
Yeah, well, let me tell you, first of all, that is a common challenge we see amongst our clients, and is certainly that is what we call a good problem to have most of the time, right?
Yeah.
So, and it does come back to when we sit down and develop a strategy for our clients, scaling is included in growth. For example, if there are certain aspects of what you offer that have capacity, part of a good strategy is going to orient around those first. We prioritize those and then we sequence later growth over the long term. So it is definitely something to consider. And if you can build a strategy from the beginning, accounting for both growth and scaling, then that is the best way to handle that.
That's so fascinating. So what are the initial steps that you have clients take just kind of right out of the gate to better understand where they are versus where they're trying to go and what it's going to take to scale, to bridge that gap?
That's a great question. So I've been doing this for 15 years and developed a process specifically for what you just asked. We call it the Digital Presence Assessment, the DPA. And what that is, we will sit down with a client for about 15 minutes, 30 minutes tops, and get a sense of their objectives and their business goals. We then dig into all of the research and we go explore every possible opportunity, the current challenges in the digital space. And we assemble an assessment as to how to proceed, illustrating, in understandable terms, the different options that you have to help achieve your goal. And from that space, that assessment, the clients and us form a strategy together.
Now, if I'm out there in Launch Street listening and I want a part of this DPA, how do I do that?
Well, we would be happy to do that. We actually offer it for qualified clients only. We do this for free. This thing, we used to charge thousands of dollars for it. And in some cases, we still do a more elaborate one. But this really is self-serving to us because it helps us match up are the aspirations of the client possible to achieve through a thorough assessment. And that's where, so for qualified clients, we do it absolutely free.
That's awesome. So I will, for Launch Street, I will put a link in the show notes to where you can learn more about that. Derek, always a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you.
So, Cisco's a very large company. And how many employees does it have total, do you know, around the world?
Over 74,000 people.
So how do you spark and connect innovation across all those different teams and ecosystems? How do you keep those channels open and make that happen?
Well, obviously for Cisco Collaboration Solutions, right? But listen, at the end of the day, I think all of us are kind of remote, right? So we're a very large company all over the world, and we do have a culture of connecting together, right? And we have a variety of tools that really allows us to stay connected. But most importantly, when you think about this innovation community, we leverage the innovation team to go and bring the best of innovation across the company. So in essence, if you think about any large company, there's probably plenty of innovation programs, right? And then there comes in another team and sets up, yet another one. So what we try to do is connect all of those innovation programs together, not only through setting up a lightweight governance process, not to be confused with bureaucracy, right? And the second one is putting all of the innovation resources, whenever that's training or competitions or, presentations or market research, to one single location, right, which is in a large company is an accomplishment of its own. And then we kind of tied it all together with an overarching program where we've made the journey for the innovator very transparent, right? So we've made it easy and acceptable, and we've managed to go and get teams connected.
What do you mean by transparent?
It means that when you have an idea and you give it to Cisco, if we don't execute your idea, we actually give you feedback why. And when you think about 74,000 employees, right, people give us ideas, right? That's something very important. And the reason it's important is because when people know why certain things are not happening in a large company, it's very important because they get feedback and they can pivot, right? And they understand where they stand. The idea might be exceptional. It just doesn't fit with the Cisco business, right? And I think it really drives appreciation for the employee taking the time to close the loop, and then it allows the employee an opportunity to pivot.
You know, as you were talking, it just brought up a memory of I was keynoting, and we did a Q&A session, and a couple raised their hand. They owned a very, very large painting company. It's based in Colorado, but is national. And they said, so I talked about the feedback loop, like a true loop versus that one-way conversation of like, and I think what you said just so clearly are just showcase that of, you know, we give people feedback, whether it worked or didn't work, they know where their ideas stand, which I think is one of the most powerful things you can do to drive more innovation. Because I found that people are more interested in feeling valued than feeling right. And so this couple raised their hand, they were talking, they said, you know, I don't get it. Like, all we get are bad ideas. I said, or we don't get any ideas. I said, what do you mean? They said, well, we have a system, right, for like getting all the ideas. And I said, okay, and she's like, but frankly, I don't read half of them because they're crap. And I was like, okay, well, let's start there with your mindset. But second, what do you do with those ideas? She's like, well, nothing. I throw them in the trash. I said, well, do you talk to people afterwards? She said, no, that's too much work. And I just, my innovation heart sank a little bit, Alex, because it just, what you're saying is the exact opposite of that. And when people, I think, and I'd love to hear your perspective on this, when people feel valued, they'll continue to drive innovation. It's not actually about whether their idea happened. It's about the value. That's what I found. I don't know if that's kind of where you guys are coming from.
Absolutely. Because, you know, when it's a two-way communication, again, you know where you stand and you know how to pivot. And most importantly, you really, to your point, you understand that somebody is listening and someone is reading all of those ideas. I mean, the irony is that when I look around, in the market, there's a lot of innovation celebration that kind of ends with, your idea is brilliant. Here's an award.
Yes.
Now, could you please go back to your cubicle?
Right. Now back to work.
Right. And if I think about your idea is brilliant, this is where the journey begins. And I think it's at Cisco, we actually, when we think about the employee innovation, we actually, you know, made few very important decisions on the way we approach this. First, we're looking for people, or actually we're looking for diverse teams of people that are willing to make those ideas happen. Meaning, if you just want to give us an idea, but you do not have a team of implementing this idea, right, or you're not willing to implement this idea, it's unlikely that we will move this idea forward, right? So think of it as a venture capital, right? It's who's on your team. And then the second one is, and if you can't, but we have this concept of tokens that our employee can invest in other people's ideas. But the basic premise is, if you can't convince 50 of your coworkers to go and vote for your idea, well, that could probably be the case where we're not going to read it. Because that means that your team is lacking persuasion skills, right? Or an ability to take the idea to market, because come on, we always know 50 people, right? And even if we don't know 50 people, we should have somebody on our team who knows them, right? So again, yeah. It's about ensuring that we find people with ideas, but we find people that are willing to build teams to make those ideas happen, and that's when we give them resources.
The other thing I really like about, I've never heard it positioned that way before. And the thing that I really appreciate about what you're saying is it also adds a layer of accountability and to see your true motivator for moving that idea forward. Are you really going to champion this? Because you got to do some work on the front end to get the team together to prove, right, that it's – and not in a detrimental way, but truly in a like, all right, if we're going to move this forward, right, there's got to be some investment on that side too.
Right. To your point, it's about a sense of ownership. And we've had cases where employees kind of said, yeah, no, we're just giving this idea, you know, out, and we're saying thank you so much. And because all of this, I mean, we talked about the transparency, right? But all of this is published on a site, on a platform where everyone can read the ideas. They can comment. Sometimes, you know, emotions fly quite high, right? Because people talk about whenever it's a good idea, bad idea, or who invented it first, right? That team or this team. And we have like mergers and acquisitions.
I love it.
Seriously, right? But there are employees that sometimes walk away from their ideas saying, like, you know, no, we actually do not know how to do this. And then somebody else steps up, right? And that's about, again, creating that culture of transparency and collaboration.
I want to flip it for a minute. What do you think are the methods or the myths that we're buying into as organizations and teams that are actually sabotaging our innovation?
What's sabotaging our innovation, I think, is the really having, really this division into innovators and not innovators, right? So when you have the central, let's say there's a central innovation team where somebody shows up and says, we're here to work on a product of the future. That's actually sabotages innovation because that really devalues others. Now, of course, there should be teams that are working on the products of the future. It's all about how you position those teams, right? And how do you ensure that the innovation teams are of value to others versus perceived as a function that's competing for innovation budgets.
Right. But to your point, right, at the end of the day, everybody adds value and contributes, and then some people move certain things forward.
Right. Because if you think about the advantages of the large company, right, large companies are beautiful in a way that there's this knowledge of employees, right? This collective knowledge is something that's phenomenal. That is a competitive differentiator. And then something that we talked in the beginning, when we all align in a perfect fashion, I mean, that's impossible. Perfection is impossible. But when we all execute together with that knowledge, magic happens, right? So it's all about teams. It's all about playing to our strengths. And it's all about win together. I think that's what enables innovation.
Yeah, I think that's brilliant. Those three for us on Launch Street, those three things are so powerful that Alex just said. And if you focus on those three, the innovation happens. You can stop talking about innovation, right? And actually make it happen. I want to bring it to you personally for a minute. When you think about how you innovate, because we all do it differently, how do you innovate?
How do I innovate? You know, sometimes it reminds me of like a maze, right? I mean, at the end of the day, it's just being open to different abilities, right? It's chasing dead ends and understanding that this is a dead end and there might be another way, right? Or you might wait and the gate could open. It's about, for me personally, it's about really believing that form follows thought. That if you can imagine it, you can create it. I mean, these are the things that I truly believe in, and just being open. And then somehow, if you, it might sound naive, right? But if you have good intentions, and if you work with people, and if you look for common interest and common value, and you look at it as a win-win approach, things happen.
Yeah, I think both of those are very true. I want to ask you a question about, you said you hit dead ends, because I think that's very demotivating for a lot of people, but you kind of said it like it was just part of the process. How do you think about dead ends and what do you do when you hit them?
Oh, I love dead ends. It's knowledge, right? Right. It's knowledge, right?
Yeah.
Because, you know, what's innovation? I mean, oh God, who knows? Innovation is a horrible word, right? I mean, you ask 100 people what's innovation, right?
They all have a different definition.
Right. And They all have a different definition. I think I gave you five conflicting definitions on this podcast, right? But it's in a lot of those things, it's really collecting data and it's really moving from uncertainty to certainty. So when you hit a dead end, that's certainty, right?
Yeah.
That's actually true. That's information, and that's great information because you're like, oh, I need to go somewhere else. Right.
I know this does not work. That's what you just said actually blew my mind a little bit. So the whole idea that the dead end is certainty, I think we think of it as uncertainty. That's still, I haven't figured it out, right? So that's a really profound shift in how to think about failures and mistakes and dead ends that, oh, that's certainty. Now I know, check that off. That's not the way we're doing this.
Right. Or we might wait, or we'll try this again when it's not raining. Right. But I think in a large company, innovation requires, being aware of your surroundings and consistently working with your internal and external ecosystem.
Yeah.
Right. So if you kind of go and you lock yourself in some building in a basement and then, think that you're going to emerge with innovative ideas 6 months later, I think that's a myth for a couple of reasons. Lonely innovator is a myth. Lonely inventor is a possibility. But innovation requires execution. I mean, yet I gave another definition of innovation, right? And then obviously in six months, the world changes.
That's right. And how do you think about that then? Because that, I know that that's the elephant in the room for a lot of people is, all right, but what if as I'm doing this, things change around me, which they're going to. So how do you bring that change into your strategy or into your process?
It's an exceptional question, right? You began this podcast by asking, first memory of innovation. And I've talked about my son, right? And if I look at Matthew, he has this never-ending case for curiosity, right? It just never ends, right? And then we become adults, right? So if I think about large companies and startups, right? The startups, if you think about startups, right? They have this never-ending curiosity. And then somehow they grow up. And that curiosity is less of a team sport and more of a political process. So I think, it's all about... it's all about having that curiosity alive. And to your point, that goes back to people. It's about listening to them. It's about empowering them. It's about having fun, right? It's about being open to possibilities. And I think that what really, it really separates adults from kids, right? Kids are open to so many possibilities, right? They're just curious. And when you think about adults, they're just, we kind of have our own set ways.
It's funny. So I have a 10-year-old who loves Dungeons and Dragons, and he likes to be the dungeon master. And I get sucked into these 3-hour games with him, which I don't understand most of the time what's happening. But what I've discovered is throwing a curveball, change is part of the process. Like he knows that's going to happen, and it happens constantly. So, you're in this room, this happens, there's a fire breathing dragon, but then suddenly this happens. And it just, as you were saying that, it just made me realize, wow, he just sees change as part of the process. Where then as adults, we look at change and it's like something that happens to us, as opposed to just kind of this natural flow of things that we can be on board for. And in fact, sometimes leverage is an asset, but it's such a different mindset around change.
Right. Even if you think about just historically, right, you want a stable job, go work for a large company, right? And what's stability? Stability is a lack of change, right, in a way. And I think the environment has changed now in a way that there's no more stability in the large companies, right? There's constant change, and that requires a very different attitude from everyone who is involved in this process.
Yeah, no, I'm so glad you said that because you're 100% right. And so I'm 46, so I saw the change happen. Millennials experienced it because it was their parents and who kind of went through that 2008. I think that was really the tipping point for a lot of us. And it's fascinating to see that change is, to your point, change is just the constant. So before we have to close up, there's a couple more questions I want to make sure to get to because of something you said. One is, how do you fend off bureaucracy? Because especially in a large company, right, you have to have some levels of standards and processes, but how do you make sure that doesn't get in the way, particularly when it comes to innovation?
Oh, at the end of the day, I respect the process, right? There's a reason why process exists. And I think, to be honest, it's about embracing it, right? It's about making sure that you have the best operations people possible, because it's when you think about operations folks in large companies, it's their strength is by ensuring that A, they know the process, they value it, and we go over it fast, right? And the second thing, look, if you have a stupid process, don't break it, go lobby to change it. And again, when you have good operations folks, they can do that. The one thing that we did at Cisco, when we have employee teams of innovators that move forward to execute their ideas, we actually give them, partner them with someone that we call an innovation concierge. And that's an Uber operations professional. And that person knows how to go and navigate around the company, right? Oh, because not everybody knows what is brand compliance.
Yeah, it's a skill.
Or how
too.
To sign an NDA or raise a purchase order. So it's all about embracing the process and hiring the best to work for it.
That's great. What a fun job in a weird way, right? Like you get to see people have their ideas realized. I want that job.
Yeah, I mean, but at the end of the day, there is a reason for the process and I respect that.
Yeah. I like what you're saying too about, look, if the process is stupid, lobby to change it. I think a lot of us get trapped in this mindset of I can't do anything about that. And then we get frustrated and then we just live in that frustration instead of actually making something powerful happen. Before we close out, where can people go to learn more or connect with you?
I'm on LinkedIn as Alex Gorychev. I write on Cisco's blogs. I would be delighted to talk to other, let's call them innovation practitioners. I really think that all of this is, it's like a group therapy, right? all of us, think about, you talked about the bureaucracy or enabling others, middle management, right? Connecting strategy to execution. I think in a lot of these innovation jobs, we have a passion to change things and we're constantly learning from each other. So I'd be delighted to connect with your audience and learn about how they're doing things.
That'd be great. Okay, we will put the link to your LinkedIn in the show notes. The last question for you is, if I am on a team embarking on really igniting a culture of innovation in my company, which a lot of large companies are really at that point where they're realizing, hey, like we need to do what Cisco did here and make innovation a true part of our DNA, what's the first thing they should do to get that momentum going?
Go to HR, right? And I'm damn serious about this because innovation is about talent, right? When you think about the venture community, right? You go to them and you say, "Hey, I have an idea." They probably heard all of the ideas in the world, so they're going to ask a second question: "Who is on your team?" Right?
Right.
At the end of the day, innovators are way more important than innovation, and it's all about the talent development. So I would strongly encourage everyone to partner with their HR organization because it's about talent. It's cross-functional. Innovation should closely align with their goals. We've done that at Cisco and it's been a joy.
It's fantastic. Alex.
Go to HR is not the first answer that you get on the corporate environment.
No, I was a little bit, I didn't know what to say back when you said that, to be honest. I was like, normally people tell me to avoid HR. I'm not sure what to do here.
Embrace your fears.
Yes, but I hear what you're saying, which is it's about people, not process at the end of the day. So get align with people who can help and colleagues who can help with the people side of it as well as the process side.
And it's playing to their strengths, right? It's their function.
Yeah. And I'm a firm believer in that. I mean, I think oftentimes when I see innovation efforts fail, and the reason we get brought in is because it's not a process problem, it's a people problem. So they might have great processes, but what they don't have is engagement. So how do we get people to recognize they're innovators so that they actually align with the process itself and actually use it?
Agreed.
Yeah. Alex, thank you so much for coming by. This was incredibly insightful.
Thank you. It's a great pleasure. Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Incredible insights, right? I think it's so important to talk about innovation, both from the mindset and the action perspective. You know, how do I think differently about what's right in front of me? And then how do I actualize my thinking? And that's why we created the Innovation Toolkit so you can do just that. You can think differently and you can act on it. I mean, what's the point of all the brilliance if you don't do something with it? Tamara, out.
Thanks for hanging with us on Inside Launch Street. If you know someone that is truly ready to unlock their innovation advantage, have them join you on Launch Street. Discover your innovation advantage. Build a team of high-performing innovators and ignite ideas and solutions that create massive impact. GOTO, LaunchStreet.com. Remember, innovators, if you don't take the leap, somebody else will.